All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome, everybody. It is Friday, the final day of the week. It's also going to be the final show of the week. Actually, I think the only and final show of the week. We have been very busy on the home front, so the shows have certainly been lacking as of late. Let me pull this up just a little bit. Maybe that's enough. Maybe I just got to stand a little bit farther away. Please let me know that you guys have audio on Odyssey. Just want to make sure that, of course, muted. Okay, let me fix that. Let me fix that. Oh, fucking Odyssey. We have a very busy day today. I have a show coming up tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll promote that a little bit later, though. We're going to wait till more people are in here. Yeah, Odyssey, I don't know. People complain that it lags and glitches and that there's audio problems. I get all kinds of complaints from Odyssey. See, we got a Coomerist in here. Welcome. We got maybe next time. Nice to see you. There's a Rook Blinken. Always good to catch you in the beginning of the show. Walther, hello. Rebellious Goy, we got you in here. Bert Bert, welcome, guys. Welcome, everybody. Lighting is 100% better. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I had a very nice white gentleman sit in a call with me and teach me how to fix it a little bit, so it should be pretty good. As you can see, the lamp is no longer behind me. It's now behind the camera. Yeah, so we'll see how it goes once the sun is fully down and we can't see anything anymore. Then we'll see how the lighting looks. Hopefully it's still okay. Schoolfish, welcome. Nice to see you over in the FTJ chat. Awesome, Zaruk. Yeah, I like Rumble. I have to be honest. I don't have too much of a problem with Rumble. They got big credibility for me when they had banned me for Holocaust denial and then unbanned me upon Stu's request. So, thank him for that. But who knows? Maybe I probably would not have gotten my account reinstated if it wasn't for that. Maybe more thank you to him. But at least they did it, right? A lot of other platforms would have just said no, and we're not doing that. Thank you. No stopping it. I appreciate that. So we are live as usual on FTJ. We're live on Rumble, Odyssey. Make sure you guys are following on all three of those platforms. We're live on Twitter. I don't really look at the Twitter chat though. So if you're a person that watches live on Twitter, well, I guess I probably should. I have like five chats open already. I feel like the Twitter chat is typically pretty slow. Not a lot of people talk on Twitter. So if you're a person that watches on Twitter, I would recommend you migrate yourself to one of the other chat rooms if you would like to actually participate, say something, kind of get my attention, something like that. I don't really look at the Twitter chat very often. And then, as always, we are live, obviously, on Rumble Studio on the Stu Peters Network, and you guys are always welcome to chat over there. I read that chat actively as well. So we got Tonitris, ethno-nationalist, over on the FTJ side. It's nice to see the FTJ chat getting a little more active over there. We're seeing some slow and steady growth over on FTJ. If you guys don't already, please make sure that you make an account over there if you don't have one yet. And give them a follow on Twitter, too. They're posting clips from all of the users' shows up on Twitter. So you guys can go ahead and repost their clips, help them grow their Twitter page a little bit. They just got this kind of kicked off. They're starting to try to grow their Twitter. So let's try to help them out, give them a hand. It's just FTJ Media based on Twitter. Zaruk, okay, we got you over on Rumble. Nice. Nice to see. I like the profile picture too. Anirtak? Anirtak? Hello from Ireland. It's nice to meet you from Ireland. It's very nice to have people from all over the world listening in. So today's topic for the show is Jehovah's Witnesses. I've been doing a little bit of research, kind of getting a better understanding of those pesky bastards that are always knocking on your door. And there's quite a bit behind them that I think is worth analyzing. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Delta, welcome, welcome. Seth, hello. Massachusetts, nice. Cheryl, welcome. So if you guys are familiar with the Jehovah's Witnesses, one in the chat room, if you guys have ever met someone, had a friend, a family member, just a coworker, Anybody in your life that you know that was a Jehovah's Witness and left at any point? Does anybody in here know of anyone with that kind of a circumstance? Or maybe yourself, possibly. Kenneth, welcome. I like the Menith. It's nice. Wow, ex-Jehovah's Witness. Ex-Jehovah's Witness. Wow, okay. Interesting. That's nice to see. Well, I don't want to say nice to see. I don't mean anything by that. But, you know, if you look into a lot of people who have left the Jehovah's Witnesses, a lot of people that leave, they end up saying that upon leaving, they feel like they were in a cult. They really have a lot of disrespect for the organization. Yeah, a lot of people that left, I've never heard someone that left with a good experience. I guess I'll say that. I don't know anybody that has left Jehovah's Witnesses and they now have decided that they are happier without it. A lot of times, the people that have left, they feel like they had bad experiences in there. So the reason I bring this up is because I'm sure everybody's somewhat familiar with them. However, I want to talk about the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses and what some of his beliefs are, because I think this points to a pretty big problem that might be present. Now, I don't know much about the average Jehovah's Witness or their doctrine or the way that they view Jews or Judaism. I'm not sure, really. But I do know what the founder believed in, and that's what we're going to analyze today, because I think that's very important. Really, I'm sorry to hear that about your mother. Okay, we got a lot of people in here that left. That's very interesting already. Wow. Corith, welcome. Nice to see you. Yeah, so I was looking into the origins of the Jehovah's Witnesses. So they were founded in the later 1800s, and it was founded by a man named Charles Taze Russell. Now, Charles Taze Russell was a early Christian Zionist, which, if you're not familiar with Christian Zionists, there are some troubling circumstances with this this belief system. This very much falls under that kind of blanket of Judeo-Christianity, which, again, this is an oxymoron. Judeo-Christian, right? These are two different values, belief systems, right? I have heard that he was a Freemason. I don't know if there's a full confirmation of that. However, more importantly, he was a Christian Zionist. And when you look into, you know, people like Charlie Kirk, if everybody here knows, is my like least favorite human being in the world. I absolutely despise the guy. I think he's a walking piece of human garbage. Charlie Kirk would be labeled as a Christian Zionist. These are the people that pout off this rhetoric of Israel being God's chosen people. The Jews are God's chosen people, and it's our duty to help and save them. So Christian Zionism it pretty much boils down today to this sect of, excuse me, sorry about that, Scofield Bible-esque Christian evangelicism, right? And to, this is major simplification, but to simplify and kind of very blandly explain what Christian evangelicism is, it's essentially a sect of Christianity that believes fervently in the Scofield Bible, which states that Jews are God's chosen people. And they follow the same prophecy that Jews follow, but in a different manner. So the Jewish prophecy states that when the third temple is erected, the Jewish Messiah will come, and the Jews will have world dominion over everybody else in the rest of the world, and each Jew will be lotted off 2,800 slaves. That is their belief system, okay? And they believe that this needs to happen by the year 6,000. Okay, now, that might sound, oh, that's not going to happen in my lifetime. That's a long time away. Well, it's not. If you look at the Jewish calendar, it's like 5,780 and change. Okay, so they're very close. They're within 200, 250 years of this time period when they believe that their Messiah must come. Otherwise, their prophecies won't be fulfilled, and he didn't actually exist, and then their whole thing is meaningless, which it is meaningless, and I think they'll find that out soon enough. However, that's their doctrine. Okay, so they believe that they need this temple built in the land of Palestine by that year, and then their Messiah must come. Now, this is why we see them attacking Palestine, attacking this area. They're doing this because they need to have that land, right, this greater Israel project, so that their Messiah can come. Okay, that's their ideology. Rockwell, welcome. Nice to see you over on Rumble. Yeah, 6,000 years wasted, I would agree with that. Thank you, Danny, I appreciate it. Yes, Shadow Bannon, we'll get into that for sure, for sure. Okay, so that is the Jewish belief system. The Christian evangelical belief system is very akin to that. The Christian evangelical belief system, or Christian Zionist, whatever you would like to call it, is a belief system that basically states that Jews are God's chosen people, as they claim to be, which, by the way, before the Scofield Bible existed, this was never a thing. No one was walking around in the 1700s or in medieval Europe toting that Jews were God's chosen people. This is brand new. This is like, in the scope of history, this is completely brand new. So they believe that Jews are God's chosen people, and they also believe that the third temple needs to be built, and that Jews need to have world dominion in order to do so. The only difference is that these Christian Zionist types believe that Jesus will be resurrected when this third temple is built. When the Messiah comes, they believe it's actually going to be Jesus coming, right? The resurrection of Jesus Christ. So we have Jews believing that they are going to get this demonic figure, which would really essentially equal the Antichrist, right? They believe that that's what's going to happen, and they're going to have all these slaves that live underneath them. And then you have these Christian Zionists who are actually offering to be their slaves, thinking that the Jews are actually incorrect under the superstition that it will actually be the resurrection of Christ instead of the Jewish Messiah. So this is why you see these conservative Christian evangelical Zionists pushing Jews up ahead of ourselves, because they believe that that's actually what God wants them to do, is put Jews on the top of the ladder, give them all these abilities so that the temple can be built and all of this can happen, because they believe that that is the path that makes Jesus come back. This is insanity, right? Where we actually are experiencing a group of people exterminating our race, our culture, our country, all of our values at the behest of Jews, thinking that somehow, some way, Jesus will come back from these activities. This is insanity. Yes, Anna, it was also the Rothschilds also helped to fund the Scofield Bible as well. Yeah. Yes, correct, Dean. Yeah, very, very interesting. Keep watching the 12-hour stream, Rockwell. Well, that's good. It's good. It's definitely a very informative show. You can take a lot of notes with that one. Yeah, so, okay, so now when we look at these Jehovah's Witnesses, right? Now, let's ignore them today and what they're doing. Rather, let's look at the founder first. We could talk about what they're doing as well after. But let's talk about the founder, what he believed in. Now, the founder was a Christian Zionist himself, again, Charles Taze Russell. And what's really important is to understand his Christian Zionism was the exact same as the evangelical Christian Zionism. Okay, Charles Taze himself also believed that Jews need to have world dominion. It's owed to them, and we need to literally give that up. And I'm going to actually pull a quote here to prove this case so that people have an understanding that this is really what he believed in. So this is from a book that Charles Taze Russell wrote in... Let me actually pull this up. So he had done a speech as well. So he wrote this book, I believe, after the speech. And he did a speech before a Jewish community in New York City in 1910. And in 1910, he prophesied in this speech, and I don't like the word prophesize because, you know, he really was getting information from probably some of these higher-up Zionists that had these things planned out. So he prophesied that in 1914, Palestine would become the homeland of the Jewish people. Now, how would he know that, right? Why would that happen? Now, what's very interesting is 1914 was the year that World War I started. And we all know that World War I resolved in the Jews receiving Palestine as a homeland. Now, what's really interesting about that is who won World War I then, right? Who won World War I? The Germans didn't win World War I. The British, how did they benefit from World War I? What did they receive from World War I? America? Did we win World War I? Did we benefit at all from that conflict? It seems the only people who had a massive benefit from World War I were the Jews. They got their little land in Palestine. So Charles Taze was correct in this assessment, which again proves a bit of foreknowledge for him to label off the exact year that this was to happen. And he had a speech about this before a group of a couple thousand rabbis in New York City, and they loved it. They cheered him on. They clapped for him. They really enjoyed him. So we're gonna read a little bit of the speech, and we're gonna read a little bit from the book as well. So let me pull this up. I just gotta find the exact spot because I have actually lost my spot that I had saved, of course. Yeah, I don't like the word. See, the reason I don't like the word prophesized is because it comes across as if he was some, like, you know, foreteller with a great deal of individual knowledge, right? Like, if I am to say, oh, I think Israel will blow up Libya on this day, right? And it's just my assessment. No one else kind of gave me that, right? Then I don't like prophesize. Well, thank you, Danny. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. Let me find this. Okay, so this is from his book, Jewish Hopes. I'm definitely going to have to zoom in on this in order for you guys to see this good enough. So let me... Okay, let's pull this up. Now, again, I want to remind you folks that this is the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay, so it's supposed to be... supposed to be a very Christian ideology. Can you guys read this? Is this big enough? I might have to go a little bit larger. All right, you got to be able to see that for sure, right? Let me just double check. Yeah, that's got to be legible. All right. Hopefully you guys can read that. All right. Let me see here. I guess we'll start up here. Start a little bit higher. Here we go. Okay. So this is, again, from the book Jewish Hopes by Charles Taze Russell, who was a Jehovah's Witness, and he was the founder of the Jehovah's Witnesses. He states, "More than 30 years ago, I abandoned the teachings of all the Christian creeds respecting Jews, Mohammedans, and heathen. I could no longer believe that the great Jehovah, I don't know what the hell that word is, it must be a typo, I guess, had destined all these thousands of millions to an eternity of torture because they had never accepted of Jesus as their Redeemer, the Savior of the world. On the contrary, my sympathy went out and still goes out to humanity in general, blinded by ignorance and superstition, and the adversary, and confused by the jarring creeds. Now, I want to point something out that's very important already. This is already very reminiscent of Christian evangelical universalism, right? This idea of a universalist creed. This is a very big problem, okay? Because when universalism comes into play, we forget racial consciousness. These two cannot mix and match together, okay? So, for instance, these people that will tell you that Haitians moving into America, learning English, and then becoming Christian makes them American, that is not true. They are not racially the same people, okay? People have to understand this concept. Proof of this is we've gone down to Haiti, we've built them the infrastructure, we've provided them with all of the materials and tools needed to maintain said infrastructure, and we brought them Christianity. Haiti is a very Christian country. Does Haiti look like America? No, it still looks like the third world, because the genetic basis of the people that created that place is not capable of founding a multi-layered civilization with new technological advancements and things of the sort. No matter what religion they have, they will never be capable of those creations, right? So we have to understand that while you might have your spiritual faith, you can be whatever denomination of whatever religion that you choose, you have to understand that race is separate from religion. Race and this idea of a belief system of what the creator is, right, or what this omnipotent power that has created the universe is, you still have to have an understanding that that power gave to you the different races, right? And because you have said different races, you have to be very careful with how each one of them remains, right? If we dilute the blood of these races. So, for example, say you have a town and there's 50 white people and there's 50 black people, and all of them intermingle, each one. Not a single person has children within their own race, but only through admixture with another race. What happens is those children won't have a solid identity of either side, one or the other. And then if you multiply this generation after generation after generation, you lose the genetic structure and value that these races are capable of producing. So we're going to end up losing the cultures that those races founded. And this is, in essence, God's natural creation. And, you know, a lot of people will try to make the argument of, you know, we all bleed red. I've heard that horrendously homosexual phrase many times. Think about crocodiles and alligators. They are considered different species. If you look at them, they look extremely similar. They eat the same things. They swim in the same waters. There is some salt water that's in there with crocodiles, I believe. But for the most part, they thrive in the same atmosphere, right? Yet, they are still considered a different species altogether. Now, why is it that when we look at races between Asiatic and African, you look at the mestizo population, these people are obviously very different because they create different structures. They prefer different climates. They have different IQ levels. They have different spiritual belief systems that they founded themselves, right? And then they can find other ones. Back to that point that we made before is you can find something else, but that doesn't mean that you are now somehow capable of upholding a civilizational standard as the people that originally founded it. It doesn't work that way. So that was just an important point here when we're reading this is this is very this universalist kind of a mindset, and this is very dangerous when it comes to some of these Christian sects. Evangelicism does this, as you can see. It is present here from this guy who is a Christian Zionist, which is pretty akin to evangelicism. So let's read a little bit further here. He says, I believe that divine sympathy for all of these is still greater than yours and mine. I found that others shared the same general sentiments, but abandoned faith in the Bible as a divine message. By God's grace, I was not swept off in the current of unbelief, which more and more is overwhelming the intellectual portion of our race. And this is really important. When he says our race, he is saying the human race. This is a very big problem, okay? Because the intellectual portion of our race, the human race, is fundamentally different everywhere you look, right? Very big problem, okay? On the contrary, I held fast to the statement of the scriptures that there is none other name given under heaven or amongst men whereby we must be saved than the name of Jesus. But of God's word revealed the fact that for 15 centuries, Christendom has been misunderstanding the scriptures in supposing that the present call of the church, spiritual Israel, marks the culmination of the divine plan. Now, this is also important. So there's a lot to analyze in this, okay? So one piece that's problematic here, and I actually talked about this on a show I was just on this evening. Rockwell, I would prefer my own, personally. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. One piece that's very important to understand here is when you get a religion like Judaism or Christianity, what's problematic is all of these denominations. This is a huge problem. And this is an echo of a bigger problem that we have racially amongst our people, specifically the collective European peoples. We have a very big problem when it comes to having these disharmonies amongst ourselves, these little disputes. We see this in the political atmosphere where, again, you know, during this COVID time period, people were not spending Christmas with their family because they voted for a different person. You see this in the religious atmosphere with, especially with Christianity, right? In the 60s, when people were voting for JFK, a lot of people were voting based upon their religious beliefs. They were saying, hey, JFK is a Catholic, I'm a Protestant, I'm afraid he's going to bring more Catholicism into the government. I don't like that, I'm not voting for JFK, right? So now we have these disputes between different denominations. And all of these denominations essentially spawn from different interpretations. So now here comes a guy, Mr. fucking Taze Russell here, who is, you know, intellectually a nobody. And he brings about, he makes the bold and brazen claim here that Christendom has been misunderstanding scripture the entire time. They need a Christian Zionist view of what the scripture is, okay? So what he's saying is this spiritual Israel, he's saying that the church was representing that and they were pushing the spirit of the divine plan, which is, you know, again, the one he's describing goes hand in hand with this idea of this Jewish Messiah returning through a temple and so on and so forth. So he says, on the contrary, we find the scriptures distinctly to teach that God has two salvations, both to be accomplished through Jesus, through faith in the only name given. One of these salvations is to a heavenly nature in joint hirership with Jesus on the spiritual plane, partakers of the divine nature, far above angels, principalities and powers, and every name that is named. The other salvation is to be human salvation. Sorry, I lost my spot. To earthly perfection by purposes of restitution, uplifting, enlightenment, etc. The perfection of the human salvation will be in to bring mankind back to the image and likeness of God, in which the race was primarily created in Father Adam. So yet again, we see the same problem. He's saying the human race was created by Adam and Eve. Okay, so again, it goes right into this universalist nature of, which, by the way, doesn't make sense. Just think about the lack of logic behind this very Jewish story, right? It doesn't make sense. Adam and Eve were what race? I guess they were, let's just assume they were white, okay? Maybe we'll assume they were black. I don't, whatever you want to assume they were. How did the other races spawn off of that? How did that come about? If Adam and Eve created the human race through reproduction, how did the rest of the peoples, how did different races come? Were they a race mixed couple? is that what happened? And they started to spawn off all these different distinctions? It's absurdity. It doesn't make any sense. Further. Sin and its death penalty have gradually effaced from mankind much of the original godlikeness, bringing to man instead brutality, weakness, decay, and death. Now, again, this is the problem, because I do agree on moral grounds with a lot of these sentiments. Even the Christian Zionist Christian evangelicals, I also agree with the moral sentiments that they have, the idea of bringing morality back into the foreground. It's very important, right? But what they fail to recognize is that the pushers of immorality throughout human history have been Jews. Everywhere you look, everywhere you go, historically, prostitution, usury, money lending, all of these different things, coin clipping, child sacrifice, child murder, lying, stealing, thieving, murdering, all of these different things. I mean, look at, if you can't see that, look at the modern state of America. The gambling industry is owned by Jews. The drug industry is completely owned by Jews. This media, which is pushing immorality everywhere you look, degeneracy, filth, you name it, there is no bounds. There are no lines drawn, is predominantly owned by Jews. Hollywood pushing the same thing, owned by Jews. Transgenderism, Jews. Feminism, Jews. Every single place you look, they are either the leaders, the financiers, or the antagonizers of this idea. So, or these ideas, these many ideas. So, if you want to get rid of immorality, you have to take the people that are pushing immorality out of the positions of power in order to keep doing so, right? That's the only logical way to do this. Let's read further. It will be the work of the great Messiah to bless the redeemed world by the uplifting influences of the glorious kingdom of God, so long promised, for which we have so long prayed. He puts in quotes, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is done in heaven," to the Jew first. When we read the Bible of the divine favor bestowed upon Israel for centuries as God's chosen people, again, very new, very Christian Zionist idea, we are to realize that Jehovah has a right to bestow his blessings and favors as he will. Now imagine this, okay? I just really want you to imagine this. Imagine being a Christian and saying, we're not supposed to question God. God says that Jews are better than us, and they're supposed to get it all first. So we're just going to listen to God and give it to them. Now, if that's the case, why aren't you just fucking Jewish? Explain that. If you think Jews are God's chosen people, why are you Christian? Why are you not just Jewish? Why not just convert to Judaism and practice that religion if you think that Jews are God's chosen? How does that make any sense? Are we following? Does anybody realize the logical inconsistency in this? I don't understand that. Klasha, welcome. Nice to see you. Further. When God, therefore, declares that it is his design that in all his dealings with our race, the collective race, again, the human race, I hate that he uses the word because he's smearing the word, the blessings shall come to the Jew first. It is not for us to rebel, nor to refuse divine favors through whichever channel they may come. So he's physically saying, God has told us, his interpretation, again, this is the problem with doctrine, is man can interpret it any way he wants. I could pick up the Bible tomorrow, I could read it front to back, and I could create my own interpretation and say, this is the Logos revealed interpretation of the Bible, and I am opening the Church of Logos. Does it mean I'm right? Probably not, because there's 50 other different churches proclaiming the exact same thing, that their interpretation is correct. This is the problem. There's no solid foundation. It's built on sand. Nor does this recognition of Israel's primacy in the divine plan necessarily signify a superiority in that race. Now, how about that? How about that? This is really important, okay? He calls our race, the human race, he talks about the collective human race, but then he refers to Jews as a different race. How does that make sense? Completely different race now. So they have special privileges. Not only are they God's chosen, but they're a race completely separate from the rest of the races, which are all compiled into one bin. They don't participate in the melting pot. Right? So this is insanity. For does not God expressly term them a stiff-necked race, a disobedient people? And does he not declare in so many words that his use of Israel has been and will be gradually with a view to showing forth his own glory and the power of his grace to take of the meaning of the mean things of the true of the world and by the transforming power of his truth to use them in their own blessing and in the blessing and uplifting of others? Okay, so This is nonsense. He's agreeing. Imagine this. Imagine agreeing that God says Jews are terrible. They're disobedient. They don't listen. They suck. But they're also God's chosen. Imagine that. Doesn't that sound like one of those situations where you have this troubled, like, shitbag child who won't listen to anything, won't follow the parents' rules? But every time he gets in trouble, they go, oh, well, he's my little angel. My little Zachy wouldn't do anything wrong. He's my little angel. That's what we're experiencing here. Okay? This is a very neurotic concept that these people are God's chosen. But also at the same time, God says that they're like shitheads who are disobedient, don't listen to anything, and are meaningless. This is neurotic. It's insane. Okay, so now this guy finds or creates the Jehovah's Witnesses, which is essentially like another evangelical sect of Christianity, and states that their mission is to bring back the resurrection of Jesus, which basically happens, again, through this bringing about of the third temple, and the uplifting of God's chosen people. This is insanity. I'm going to be brazen here, but it's superstitious fucking mumbo jumbo. It's nonsense. None of it is based in reality. It's all based on Jewish doctrine. It all comes from Jewish doctrine. That's a very big problem. So, when you talk to someone who is a Jehovah's Witness and they claim that this, that is a past Jehovah's Witness, rather, and they claim that this is a cult and it's very dangerous, I'm starting to understand why. I've been speaking with quite a few people who are either are Jehovah's Witnesses or know people that are Jehovah's Witnesses, and it's very damning. It's very damning to say the least. I would never follow a religion that states, or that's founder states, that Jews are God's chosen people. All biblical interpretation aside, anybody that states that Jews are God's chosen people, I could never trust them with anything, ever. Yeah, Pagan Bear, I mean, I agree with you. It's very difficult to follow doctrine when there's so many different interpretations. That's a really hard spot here, is, you know, when you have 10 different people, or 10 different sects of people, rather, claiming that they know the right path or the right way that this is to be interpreted. How do you ever know what you're in is correct? And especially when you're able to, you know, poke holes in all of these different doctrines when you find them. This is the issue. And this is why the doctrine that should be followed should be based in nature. If you bind your doctrine to nature and ground all of your principles to nature, it's impossible for your doctrine to be wrong, right? We want to stay away from man-made doctrine as physically possible and stick with natural doctrines or nature-driven doctrines, right? Which would be the true essence of what God has created. Nature being this eternal thing that man cannot change. Right? We can't change, again, race as an example. You can't change your race. You can't. You could be Michael Jackson. You could bleach your skin. You can try to look as much like another race as you'd like, but you can never change your race. It's just not the way it works naturally, right? The same way that we can't create water, right? We physically cannot. You can't. No one can sit in a back room and concoct a substance that makes water. You can't make water. It's a natural thing that exists, right? You can synthesize it, you can purify it, you can't make it, right? And it's the same thing with blood. You can synthesize blood, you can purify blood by over time mixing or intermingling only with people of the same blood, right? But you can't make blood. No one, you can't make a race of people. And that's something that's very important for us to understand. So that is a natural principle here. And there's other many more natural principles. But these are basically all things that are not tampered or cannot be tampered by man. And those are the things that should be eternal. So when you look back in ancient history at all these ancient civilizations that supported the multiple gods, right? Multiple variations of gods. You saw this with the Greeks. You saw it with the Egyptians, the Romans. This broad term paganism, which is it's a terrible term. Pagan comes from the Latin word paganus, which essentially means like rural, right? So. To call somebody pagan is kind of like calling them like a backwoods hillbilly. It's pretty similar. It's akin to that. So this word is I don't really like the word, but basically when you look at these old doctrines, these quote unquote pagan doctrines, they are bound to soil. And this is something that is very different than what we're used to with a lot of these. I guess we'll call them Abrahamic religions, these newer, more modern religions, right? In these older religions, they were all bound to the civilization itself, right? So the Romans had Roman gods, the Greeks had Greek gods. And when you actually look, the depictions of these gods are extremely similar, right? Their Zeus and Jupiter are very identical looking beings. So you'll find that these civilizations, when you look at the gods that they were revering, all of these gods had themselves They were bound to some kind of piece of nature, right? The god of the sun, the god of the ocean, right? Poseidon. These are essentially gods that are a part of nature, right? Or they're like man's interpretation of nature. They're not distorting that nature. They're not taking the value away from the nature. Rather, they're revering the nature itself through a medium that man has created as like a personification of it, if that makes sense, right? So we need to start understanding how to revere nature again. And again, that doesn't mean you have to be of any one religious piece. You can certainly revere nature and not be religious. Well, not be religious. You can't be atheistic. You don't have to prescribe to any specific religion to revere nature, if that makes more sense. So you don't have to have a certain denomination or sect that you're a part of in order to be revering of nature and revering of God. Yeah, Austin, go ahead. So with that said, that was just a piece I really wanted to cover on the show today. I thought that was very important when I found that out, because I know a lot of people have had Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on their doors before in the past. I actually, my wife has been bothered by these people many times. One of them is attempting to dig her claws in, and I had to warn my wife about it. So I looked a little deeper, and that's when I found this insanity. So if you guys want to look further into that, because there's a hell of a lot more, I just read one brief little passage. The book is called Jewish Hopes. I can't find the year that it was published for some reason. It was called Jewish Hopes. I think it was like 1910. It was somewhere around there. It was around the time that he made his prediction of Jews returning to Palestine. I think so. In other news, I found a couple other interesting things. I was talking with a friend of mine in a call yesterday, or 2 days ago. And I learned about this character. One in the chat, if you guys are familiar with him too, if you're not, Alexander Shulgin. One, if you guys know who that is. Two, if you do not. Elprita said, once you are nice and talk and let them talk to you, you become a return visit, potential Bible study. Yeah, I believe that's what this woman is trying to do to my wife. She's trying to like set days that she can show up. She's trying to invite my wife out for coffee. She gave her like a fucking copy of the Bible. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. I think it's all to me, it seems like a buttering up process. That's really what it seems like. And I'm sure that's probably what it is. All twos? Not a single person knows who Alexander Shulgin is? Okay, well, I guess we'll go into it then. So Alexander Shulgin, he's known as the Godfather of Ecstasy. He's the one who kind of got this whole, no, not Solzhenitsyn, definitely not to be confused. Yeah, I mean, my wife's not going to read it anyway. I can't get her to read a book for my life, but it is what it is. So he was the godfather of ecstasy, the party drug that everybody is familiar with, I'm sure. And he was known for experimenting with all of these different psychedelic drugs. A lot of these are chemical compounds, right? So basically, actually most of these psychoactive drugs, SSRIs, these things, they're all chemical compounds. Most of these chemical compounds were founded by Jewish chemists, like the majority of them. Another really good example is Ambien, if you guys are familiar with Ambien. Ambien was synthesized by a Jew, and Ambien is one of the most dangerous drugs in the world. It's supposed to be a sleep drug, but there are a lot of cases that a lot of people mix Ambien with alcohol, and it can create some really bad encounters where these people don't remember anything that they do. Basically, they kind of go like blackout, and they're living without even really knowing it's crazy. So a lot of these psychoactive drugs are created, these chemical compounds, by Jews, which obviously there's a very clear reason for them. There's actually an article that some Jew wrote about. Let me see if I can find it. This Jew wrote an article about how Molly could cure anti-Semitism. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, you really can't. They are an insidious force. Here it is. It's an article by a Jew who asks, can we cure anti-Semitism with Molly? An MDMA study hints at psychedelics' impact on hate. Okay? Now, another way of wording this, so basically what this Jew says in this article, if you guys want to read it, I'll link it in the chat, so I'm not going to read this shitty article. But essentially what he states in the article is that studies show that MDMA makes people less hateful and yada yada, which is, you know, obviously because it breaks down all of your fucking brain cells, so you're not smart enough to hate anything anymore because you have no intelligence. So another way of wording it would basically be, can Molly and ecstasy destroy your convictions? Yeah, they can. They absolutely can. And that's what will happen. And I have a direct experience with family. I'm sure if you guys are frequent viewers of the show, you've heard me. If you take Ambien, get the fuck off of it. Get off of it. Meditate at night. Stay the hell away from that stuff, man. Anybody who's taking any psychoactive drugs, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medication, Ambien, all these things, get the fuck away from them. For your own good, please, get the hell away from these things. I promise you, first off, none of them cure anything. They don't cure or fix anything. They are Band-Aids. They're Band-Aids. The problem still remains. The second that you are not on that drug, the problem resurfaces itself. So you can, I promise you, you can do without these things. Now, if you're on, like, medicine for schizophrenia, don't take that advice, okay? But if you're on antidepressants, you know, anti-anxiety medication, and sleeping medication, these things, I promise you can live without it. Think about what would your ancestors have done in nature hundreds and hundreds of years ago. So the idea, yeah, exactly. I agree. The chemical imbalance theory was invented. Yes, it was. It's Jewish pseudoscience. The idea is that you are to basically use these drugs, and it's like a perpetual weed smoker, right? if you're a guy who smokes weed every day, you can still be a functioning person in society, but these people become very soft. Do you ever see, like, a guy who's a big-time weed smoker, like, fucking, like, he's, like, a raging hothead? No, because it brings down your convictions. It destroys your convictions inside of you. That's why all these people on psychedelics, they all love people, and they love talking to people. Because it's breaking down their convictions. Again, if you're a frequent watcher of the show, you've heard this story before, but I have a grandfather who for years and years and years was very, very he had strong convictions, and he was very serious about race. He was very serious about not being around other races, not intermixing with other races, extremely serious about this. Literally, just, I hate blacks. That was, like, what it boiled down to, okay? He gets, you know, this open heart surgery a couple years back. After the open heart surgery, he's immobile. He's out of work, and that'll make any guy depressed. You kind of lose your purpose. So his doctor prescribes him antidepressants. You know, I tried telling the guy don't do it, but what do I know? You know, I'm just a fucking 26-year-old. So he decides to take these antidepressants, and I shit you not, within a couple months of him starting these antidepressants, he's just mentally a completely different person. All of the convictions that he once had are completely gone. They don't exist anymore. He used to be against foreign cars. He used to be, again, a fervent racist. He used to be very serious about, you know, morality and lying and all these things. And all of it's just gone. I mean, like, he doesn't hold a single one of these convictions anymore. And these drugs will do this to people. They just completely destroy your fucking mind. They you're not depressed anymore because you don't have the serious conviction that when things disappoint you, that depresses you, right? Like if I really want this to happen, or I'm really serious about this one thing, I have a serious connection or appreciation for this thing, and I lose that, you it's natural, you will become sad, and depression is the ultimate of that sadness, right? It's the extreme of that sadness. Now, on the other side of things, if you are using a drug that fucking breaks down all of your conviction and the things that you have a deep connection with, well, what happens is you're obviously not going to be depressed that you lose these things or that you're missing these things or you don't have it, because you don't have the conviction that it's necessary to have those things anymore. It's a Band-Aid. It's more of a coping mechanism than anything. It's just like a person who's a perpetual alcoholic, right? They get away from their job. The second they're home from their job, they grab a bottle of beer and they fucking drink and drink and drink and drink until the end of the night. And the reason they do it is to escape. It's because they don't want to think about the problems that they have. They don't want to deal with the problems they have. So they mask it. They cover it up with a Band-Aid. They slap it on, get drunk till they pass out. Then the next day they go to work and they repeat the process. And they repeat the process. And they repeat the process. And if you keep doing that, every time you're free to think on your own, you just get pissed drunk. Well, of course, you're never going to have to face your problems. You're never going to have to deal with your problems. So humanity needs to be, really, if we cared, I know that SSRIs are not psychedelics, but what I'm saying is they're chemical compounds. I know that they're not psychedelics. They're chemical compounds, though, that change how your mind functions. Which is very close to what a psychedelic is. It's a compound that changes how your mind functions. So our society needs to start educating people on how to fix the problems that they have, find the problems that they have from the beginning, or from the source, rather, and fix the problems rather than mask them with all of these different Band-Aids. Pornography is a Band-Aid. Drugs are a Band-Aid. Alcohol is a Band-Aid. Gambling is a Band-Aid. And drugs, when I say drugs are a Band-Aid, understand, it's not just these illegal, you know, Class A drugs. I mean, there are like over the counter drugs are still a Band-Aid, right? Like people that are like, oh, I got a headache, like let me take an ibuprofen. It's a Band-Aid. You don't have, like, you can recognize that for what it is. That's not the end of the world, right? But understand that you're relieving yourself of your natural ability to handle these problems, and instead you are now giving a man-made substance the power to do what you yourself could do on your own. I think that's the key. And that's what people need to be educated on. Really, Bow Hunter, that sounds quite interesting. I'm surprised they actually listened to that. Really, Daniel, I'm that's probably what that article I linked is actually about. I couldn't read the article because I don't care. He said there was literally a big white nationalist who took psychedelics and totally flipped. He runs propaganda for Jews now. It kills your conviction. It literally destroys your convictions. Jews would love it if we were all taking psychedelics and all these different drugs. Yeah, I agree. If you have pain and you need pain relief, there are many, many natural ways, many natural avenues. That's an interesting one. D-Truth says, my husband was put on Prozac once, and I made him get off of it. The doctor was really upset about that. We changed doctors, needless to say. He couldn't function on that stuff and became a zombie. Wasn't paying attention to anything around him and couldn't focus enough to understand any conversation. That's not living any kind of life, and worse than what he was dealing with. Absolutely. There's a reason that every drug that you can take has side effects, because it's not meant to be in your body. It might temporarily fix the problem that you have or defray you away from that problem for a time being, but it's creating more problems because it's not meant to be there, right? It's like, think about if you have a paper cut on your finger and it hurts, right? And I'm like, ow, my finger hurts. I could say, let me take a lemon and squeeze some lemon juice into my eyes. Then when my eyes start to burn, I'll forget about the pain that's in my finger. I'm no longer going to realize that the finger pain is there because I'll be in so much excruciating pain in my eyes. Well, yeah, but I could do that. I certainly could do that. But the lemon juice isn't meant to be in my eyes. It's probably not good for me to do that to my eyes. So now I might end up blind, right? This is basically what these drugs are. Every single one of these drugs that you take, there's some side of, well, actually, most of them, there's like 50 side effects, and some people get like one or two of them, right? But you get a side effect, then now you got to take another drug. So, I have a heart problem. So now I got to take this drug for my heart disease. Now I got a liver problem because that's a side effect of that drug. So now I got to take another drug for the liver problem. But that drug that I take for the liver problem can cause tissue damage. So now I have weak muscle structure. So now I have to take a steroid to help with the muscle structure. It's like you'll fucking be doing it forever, right? So we have to learn to live naturally. We have to learn to do our absolute best to avoid all of these man-made substances as coping mechanisms. D-Truth says, it was only making him escape from reality. He was military and had PTSD. It does. It makes you escape from reality. And I'm sorry to hear that. And I'm glad that you were able to have the consciousness and the conviction to pull him away from them. Because there's not a lot of people that will do that. A lot of people will just go, whatever it is, what it is. My wife is actually a very good example. She was taking, it was basically Prozac. It was something very similar to that, 'cause she needed it for her anxiety. And she claimed, "Oh, I wake up and I feel like I'm gonna cry. I wake up, I feel like I'm gonna cry. I tried to quit it for a year, and then I just got these like depressive slumps, and all my friends told me something seemed off and that I should go back on them, so I went back to it." And I said, "Well, here's the problem. When you got off of them and you were off these drugs for a year, were you doing anything to touch on the source of why you had all the anxiety? Did you ever try to address what was maybe causing those problems?" "No. No, so you took the Band-Aid off and you didn't put any you didn't use anything to heal the wound, and now you're pissed off that it didn't work, so now you want to put the Band-Aid back on." It's like, okay, you still have to address the wound still, right? You can't just keep covering it up. You have to address it. And she did. She quit the she quit them about a year ago. She's doing good. She's doing very good. She just needed the right guidance, and that's what a lot of well, specifically when it comes to women, women need a lot of spiritual guidance with those things when it comes to emotional behaviors. Are we talking about the Jehovah's? That was the first half of the show. We just had some quick points to bring up on that. Well, not quick, but we had some points to bring up on that. Speaking of which, we're actually coming up on the second half of the show. We're about an hour and 10 minutes or so into the show. I think we're going to take a brief little intermission. I'm going to use the restroom, get myself. I'm just about out of my water here, so I'm going to get myself another water, and then we'll hop back into the show. We'll probably just take some questions and comments from the chat, and we'll kind of see where that takes us and continue to converse there for a little bit. And we'll be closing up around 6 o'clock. Don't forget, folks, we do have a show at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. We're going to be reviewing The Myth of the 20th Century, the book, with Joel Davis, Australian nationalist, and Jack Brady, who's also an Australian nationalist. It's going to be a really good show. It's going to be a very good show. So make sure that you guys catch that. I think it's going to be a very insightful discussion. Because if you have not seen or have not read Myth of the 20th Century, it's a pretty eye-opening book for sure. All right, folks, we'll be back in about 5 minutes or so. So give me a brief little intermission here, and we'll continue with the show in a couple minutes here. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Second half of the show. Again, this is going to be a little more of a relaxed half. Just going to kind of catch up with the chat rooms, take any questions or comments. We'll kind of have a very calm rest of the stream. Because later tonight, we're going to be doing a very intense stream reviewing Myth of the 20th Century. Yeah, it's going to be a good review for sure. Bo Hunter with a very generous $50 super chat. He says, O/Zach, thank you for your efforts. Thank you very much for supporting said efforts. I greatly appreciate that. And a friendly reminder to everyone, now that we are coming up on the second half, we're going to do all of our promotions. So if you guys do want to support the show, you guys can do so through super chats. You can super chat on my Rumble channel, which is Logos Revealed I. You can super chat on Odyssey. We've got Entropy. We've got FTJ. I always do recommend if you guys really want to super chat and weed out that middleman. A lot of these websites have some pretty big fees. Odyssey is 8.5%. Rumble's 20%. Entropy is about 15%. FTJ, they only take 3%. So we cut out some of those middleman fees, giving less money to the powers that be. Carry all, thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Glad you enjoyed. So when I am doing shows on Rumble Studio, which is on the Stu Peters Network on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I have no audio for the network. Well, I guess I could still do it for Odyssey. So I don't play music in between breaks like I normally would because they don't hear it on the Rumble Studio. I can't figure out how to get audio on there. It's annoying. I fucking hate technology so much. No matter what I do, no matter like what I set up on here, you just can't share audio from your computer. I can share my screen. I can share my video. I can physically screencast my OBS, but I can't cast the audio from my OBS. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. So yeah, there is no there's no audio. That's why a lot of these shows, it's a lot of monologuing, because I physically can't watch videos with you guys because you can't hear them. So I'm basically just talking because it's the only thing you guys can hear. Speaking of which, I'm going to try to have some more guests on sometime soon. We're very due for like a guest show or an interview. I haven't done one in a while. To be honest, I'm getting, like, I had a lot of people warn me about burnout, and I thought it was like bullshit, and you know, I'm young, so I'm pretty enthusiastic and driven most of the time. So when people were telling me, hey, don't overcrowd yourself, you're going to get burned out, I kind of just like brushed it off, like, you know, fuck you, I got it, I'm fine. But I am starting to experience a little bit of that burnout, and I think, I don't think that it helps that I am, it's cold. When this cold weather rolls around, I tend to get like, I don't want to call it like a seasonal depression, but it's very much something like that. When it gets cold, I get miserable. I don't want to do things. I've been a little bit lazy this December, I will be entirely honest. Some of it has been, you know, between the things I have going on with family and these other things, it's been a little bit difficult to keep up with things the way I'd like to. But I also have been kind of lazy on some days as well. So I'm planning on setting up for January. You're right, Walter, you can't. I'm planning on setting up for January a bit of a more packed schedule again, where we can get some serious interviews going. You know, I like to, when I have somebody on for an interview and a discussion, I really like to, especially if it's a first time guest, research who they are first. Like, I like to watch their show for like, you know, 3 or 4 hours, watch like a full show that they've done, or maybe even two in some cases. So I can write up like a questionnaire and come up with some unique questions. I don't want to come on and it's just like this very basic, like, hey, how are you? You know, what do you think of Jews? And then, like, that's it. You know, I want it to be meaningful shows. So I'll set some stuff up for January. We'll get some more things going here. Be patient with me. Gonna be some stuff coming. I have a lot of projects on hand right now. I just haven't finished any of them. I have 3 or 4 blueprints for Logos Academy lectures videos set up, where I'm gonna do some more whiteboard series videos. I have the blueprint for like 3 or 4 episodes set up. I just haven't recorded them. I have a couple blueprints for Twitter threads set up at the moment. They're not finished yet, any of them, but they're getting there. So I'll be having some nice Twitter threads come out. I've got another 12-hour stream blueprint that I have set up that I'm very interested in doing. That's going to be a while to fully flesh out. I'm going to try to maybe set that for the end of January. I've got a couple interviews in mind for January. I actually have a podcast I might be going on in January, considering if I get a date set up with the person. So we'll get some stuff going. I wish. That would be nice. George says, Logos is hiring for his new studio he's building. We'll be replacing InfoWars. That would be really nice. I would be more than happy to replace InfoWars. And I honestly, I wish I had, like, a revenue like InfoWars does, where I could actually have employees that help me with things. Because I'll tell you, one man gig, one man show can be tough. It can be tough. Altered Lawn, am I saying that correctly? I hope I'm saying that right. With a 1488 super chat over on FTJ. Thank you very much for cutting out that middleman fee. He says, a little bit for the coffers. I believe in you, young man. Merry Christmas / Yule, whatever you do. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. It's a shame we're at the point where we all just kind of say happy holidays now, right? Because we don't know what to say to people. Thank you very much. I do celebrate Christmas. Again, I'm not Christian. And I don't celebrate Christmas maybe in a very Christian sense. It's more of a family get-together thing for me. That's kind of how I treat it. Yeah, Anko, I'll have to do that. It's a science thing, and I just despise science. It's a topic I can't wrap my mind around it. I don't grab any interest in it. Like, that documentary you had originally sent me, I watched it in full. Like, it's hard to say that with, like, a conviction. Like, I watched it with my wife. My wife is into medicine, and, you know, she really likes all that kind of science-type stuff. So she really enjoyed it. She watched the whole thing, like, front to back. And, like, I watched it, but I just kept kind of, like losing my focus and not caring too much. I'm like a normie when it comes to science, if that makes sense. Yeah, Delta, I think you'll enjoy it. Well, thank you, D-Truth. I really appreciate that. I'm happy to hear. Yep, we're live Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. And then I do other shows in between here and there. I always try to kind of throw it in when I can. Oh my god, that's hilarious. Walter says, sell Logos' logic pills and go back to the wobbly camera and sell motion sickness pills. That's what I'll do. I'll wobble the camera all the time and I'll sell motion sickness pills. Have you been feeling like things are wobbling while you watch the show? Get Dr. Bernstein's motion sickness pills. Fucking, man, there's so many of these fucking scoundrels. Skitten said, I didn't know you were married. Congrats. We need more marriages and influencers. Yeah, I agree. We need more influencers that are married with children. Giona says, I love your show as always. Can you do serious deep dives into the Jewish infiltration into all video games, music, toys, TV shows, movies, etc.? Maybe a show or whiteboard on each category. I'm a 24-year-old male. You're the only one who revealed things like the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and The Last of Us, etc. No one does deep dives on these things like you. Thanks for all that you do. Of course, I'm happy to do so. Thank you for your very polite comment. And yeah, I'd be happy to do that. To be honest with you, I grew up a gamer. I liked playing video games as a kid. I'm very iffy on video games. I'm pretty against them. I'm okay with people playing them very infrequently, just kind of as a hobby here and there. It definitely can be a habit that goes overboard. But the entire industry of video games has been completely destroyed. It's been corporatized mostly by Jewish finance. It's terrible. It's just terrible. So I could certainly do some deep dives. I know a lot. I know a lot more than people probably think I would in that area, at least. I know a lot about music as well. I know a decent amount about TV shows. I don't know anything about toys. I don't know if I could. I'd have to research a lot to learn more about toys, but the other three categories, especially video games, I'd be pretty good at. Skyrim is a very cultured game. Yeah. It's extremely cultured, actually. A lot of those Bethesda games are very cultured. Secure the future of our people with a less than 0.01 library coin. I've never even seen that. So whatever that is. He says, any thoughts on the Nick Fuentes assassination attempt? All the Groypers say that us Wignats are gloating and happy about it. Well, first off, I will say I don't fit the category of Wignat because I'm not a Wigger. So I'm not a Wignat. I do like that you put it quotes. But when it comes to this assassination attempt, well, it's tough. I think assassination attempt is a strong term. Obviously, the guy had, thoughts to murder him. It's when you hear assassination attempt, you think like he got shot at, like a guy like physically shot at him, and the bullet grazed him, or he survived at getting shot, or something like that. But when it comes to the actual situation itself, I think it's an unfortunate, and at the same time, I know this is a very revolutionary mindset that I hold. So I would say there is a silver lining in it, and that it's actually a net positive. Obviously, no one was hurt, so there's a very good piece to that. But it does a couple things. One, for his own personal image, it actually helps him a lot with his situation with that woman that he maced. Because now it shows that there was reason for him to react in the way that he did. But secondly, I think yet again, it gains more sentiment on our side. The more they martyr our people, the more they persecute our people, the more they do things against us and our movement, for what that's worth, the better it is for us because it gains public sentiment onto our side. There's probably a lot of people that maybe either didn't know much about Nick Fuentes or didn't really like him, and then they see something like this happen, and now it gets them to look into him, right? Think about this fucking, I don't like him. I think he's a disgusting scumbag, but this Lil Peep character who was a rapper, I guess you could call him, or whatever the fuck he was. He died of some like pill overdose. He was a piece of human garbage, but when he died, that's when he blew up. That's when his music just fucking skyrocketed and everybody started paying attention to who the guy was after he died, right? Because he had made a martyr of himself. So I think that's something that's really important to people to understand is martyring is a really important piece in revolutionary activity. Doesn't mean we need to go necessarily die in the streets for the cause or anything like that. But any kind of persecution, even someone being arrested for throwing a Roman salute or being arrested for denying the Holocaust, these are acts of revolutionary fervor which end up pushing public sentiment in our favor because it forces the system to crack down on top of us. And that's kind of how I see this assassination attempt. Skitting them, I certainly hope not. Yeah, the video game industry has been bought and destroyed by Jews. Very early video games, like between like 90, 95 to like 2010-ish, video games really did not, or even I would say almost probably up to like 2012. Jews didn't have a lot of influence in video games. Most video games were made by white people, Japanese people. That's pretty much it, really. And then Jews figured out that it was a booming industry, and then they decided, oh, okay, let's be Jews and do what we do. And they took it over, and everything that they take over, they rip the soul out of it. So that's why video games suck nowadays, it's because the soul has been ripped out of them. Wilhelm says you could. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm tired. I'm having a long day. Wilhelm says you could review the documentary "The Merchants of Cool." It's made by a Jew, but it's interesting. I'll look into it. I'm not familiar with it. Sounds about right, Daniel. Secure the Future of Our People says thank you. Cultured, nuanced take as always. Yeah, no problem. I don't hate Nick Fuentes. You know, there's views I disagree with. I don't think that I don't think that Christian nationalism is necessarily the way. I think there has to be a racial component involved. And you know, he the thing with Nick that I think it's tough, and I actually really appreciate it though. I think it's brilliant, and it's why he's as large as he is he does a lot of sarcastic dry humor with a lot of hyperbole in it. And because of that, it's like really difficult to determine what his views are most of the time. So when he talks about like blacks, you know, like he'll make comments about how like niggers are stupid and something of the sort. But it's impossible to tell what his take is on race, you know, where he actually sees that going. And I think it's good. I think it's intelligent what he's doing, 'cause he's building an audience off of that, but it's really hard to actually tell where the person lies ideologically. Yeah, Anko, I heard that, and I don't agree with that at all. I think that's a terrible take. But again, someone can have a terrible take, and I don't have to hate the guy. I don't think that helps us either. I think our hatred should be driven towards the Jews that are doing things that are far worse than making brazen statements on their live shows. It has not been a good year for Nick. I would disagree. I think it's been a fucking amazing year for Nick. I think he's reached a public image that he never really even thought he would get to. He's basically gone massive at this point. He got like 400,000 followers on Twitter just after creating the his account or getting reinstated. He's blown up. I mean, I think it's been a great year for him. Yeah, he's had some rocky troubles, but that's part of revolutionary progress. Yeah, Fake Ass Moon Landing says spot on about video games. Companies became converged and became more interested in pushing the Jewish narrative than actually making good games. Yeah, well, again, this goes right back to that thing that we've talked about before on the show, where things fall to corporate interest, right? We talked about really just a base level example, cars, right? Cars in the 50s and 40s in this country, cars had a character, a spirit to it. There was like a soul in cars, and slowly over the years, as these companies became more and more corporate and they started being financed by these massive investment firms rather than by the people themselves, they start to push what the investment firms want them to push, which is this Jewish narrative, right? So then they lose their, they become soulless. They lose their character. And that's basically what happened with video games. It's happening with television, movies, everything you can think of. All of it. None of it is made to be unique and appeal to the consumer anymore. Rather, it's all made to specifically just push a message. If you guys will give me a second, I'm just going to grab a box of tissues really quickly. My nose is all of a sudden getting some allergies. All right, folks, sorry about that. Yeah, a little bit of an allergy attack there. Skitten, I don't think that was him in that video, though. I think that's bullshit. I don't think there's any proof of it. Yeah, and that's really bad when it actually goes into the educational realm, when education becomes political. I mean, it's in the spiritual realm, too. You go to the churches, and the churches are flying the pride flags and pushing multiculturalism and open borders and shit. So it's touching all aspects of society. It's cancer. It's cancer. There's no other way to do it. It's cancer. We're experiencing cancer. And cancer cannot be healed. We know that. So cancer can only be removed. If that makes sense. Wink, wink, right? Yeah, PMR. Everybody in this chat, we all just have to start doing psychedelics. We'll lose our hate. We'll all become Jew lovers. Fucking insanity. Really altered. I'm not familiar with many of those. I don't really play video games anymore, so my knowledge of video games has to go like from like 2 or 3 years ago. All right, Daniel, he says, major black pill from Germany, Logos, for current news. All right, lay it on me. Lay the black pill down on me. See how good I can handle it. I'm really getting slammed with an allergy attack here. I don't know what the hell's going on. Daniel says, mass terror attack by Browns. Dozens injured. Kids killed. Browns plural? Yeah, I didn't hear about it. Look at Martin Selner's Twitter. Terrorist attack at a Christmas market in Germany. Very bad. Well, I hate to be the silver lining guy again, but kind of goes right back to what I said before. The more these awful things happen, the better it is for us in the long run. Gets a lot of the normies out of their comfort zone. Need them to start realizing that things are not as nice as they seem. I'm not seeing anything. I don't know who the fuck Martin Selner is. I just looked him up. I don't see him. Oh. Found him. Good. Yeah. So yeah, again, you know, this goes right back to this concept of we can use this for political propaganda. I want you guys to think about the Night of Broken Glass. Kristallnacht. What started Kristallnacht? Does anybody here know what started Kristallnacht? Anyone familiar with what caused Kristallnacht? There you go, Daniel. Assassination of a German politician. Yep. The Jew Herschel Grinspan killed a German politician. And that made the people of Germany, the National Socialists, use that to fire the people up. Because the people won't fire themselves up. So they use that to stoke the flames of revolutionary fervor. And when the people found out about what happened, all of them started breaking some Jewish businesses' glass, right? So all of these things that happen in society that are terrible, and they do suck. I mean, I'm not gonna say that they don't. But all of these things that happen are a steady process closer and closer towards revolution for us. It's not fun to watch them happen. It's not fun to deal with them, but when they do happen, it brings us closer and closer to what needs to be done. And we need to harness these events. We need to master our abilities of propaganda, take these events when they happen and start to use them to agitate. Oh, I see we got a $15 super chat from Bigot Smalls on Entropy. Thank you very much, sir. Greatly appreciate that. He says, if you enjoy lfgcrew.org, Audio Busy Living Life, visit the channels live when you can and say hails. Drop a dono within your means to keep great pro-white content broadcasting. Well, thank you very much for that. I'm not familiar with LFG Crew. Can you maybe give some background as to what that is? I'm not familiar. And thank you kindly for the support. I really appreciate that. Never let a good crisis go to waste, he says. Yeah, well, it's true. You know, it's a tough statement, but it is unfortunately true. Anytime something like that happens, it's a shame that it happens, but we have to harness when it's happening. if we can take enough advantage of the fact that it happened, massive things can spawn from that. Think about, again, we were just talking about Christianity earlier and Jesus Christ. Think about the crucifixion of Jesus. The Jews giving this guy a hard time and throwing him up on a cross. Think about what that did. It created a worldwide religious movement based on a martyr figure. So that's how these things happen. That's why I don't talk about these things because I just think it's gay to sit around and like speculate on the Donald Trump assassination. I really think it's fucking gay. But truly, I believe that assassination attempt was like 150% a false flag to make Trump look like a martyr figure so they could get this perfect photo of him looking like a badass so that all the fucking normies would clap like seals and go, oh, God, he's a survivor. Oh, geez, Jesus saved him, you know, and then more people would just vote for him, and then it made his winning look a lot more organic. I'm a strong believer that that's the case. I could be wrong, but it seems all too convenient that some retard with a rifle can't hit his shot, and then he grazes the guy's ear. I mean, what are the odds of that? Come on. And they use that in the Trump campaign. Yeah, D-Truth. Well, and again, that's all it is. It's an opinion, and that's why I don't go into these assassination things and false flags and shit. I could do shows about it all the time, but it's just speculation. It's just opinion. You'll never get solid grounding. I try my absolute best to keep everything in reality as best I can. If it's not based in 100% fact, I try not to talk about it. That's kind of my rule of thumb. Sinister Kermie, I think you've changed your name a little. Welcome. And a little $5 super chat says, long time no see. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas, my friend. Thank you very much for the super chat. I greatly appreciate it. We're actually coming up on the end of the show here. We got about 15 minutes left. I'm getting a little tired, honestly. I don't know how I'm going to survive this next show. I got to eat, to be honest. I had to make myself a dinner in between these two shows. But don't forget, tonight, folks, we're going to be ending this show very soon. However, we will be live again tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be joined by Joel Davis and Jack Brady for a Myth of the 20th Century book review, provided everything still goes as plans. Are planned. We have a little concern from Joel that he might get his home raided for his activism, but I don't think that's actually going to happen. Hopefully we're okay. And as long as everything goes to plan, as planned, can't speak. I'm losing my brain here. As long as everything goes as planned, we'll be doing that show. 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. I'm really excited for this chat. Oh, Sinter. I'm sorry. I don't know why I read that as sinister. My apologies. You bring presents, not sinister things. Good. That's very good. Yeah, Joel's a cool dude. And Jack Brady is really, really cool as well. So, awesome. Sticks with a $14 super chat on the Rumble Studio to the Stu Peters Network. He says, as an embarrassed former MDMA user, I can assure you that the doctor's assumption was a false hypothesis. Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. Thank you, Sticks, for supporting the Stu Peters Network. Just a friendly reminder, I always have to remind people, I take no offense if you support Stu's show. I don't mind that at all. Just do know that any super chats, any and all super chats that are done on the Rumble Studio on the Stu Peters Network, go to Stu. I don't get like a cut out of anything like that. So if you guys do want to support my show, you can always do so on my Rumble, which is Logos Revealed I. Just a friendly reminder. Always want to make sure people know that. But I am glad that you are a former MDMA user and no longer using it. It's very important. A lot of drug usage problems in this country, big time. Even the more light drugs, like weed. I'm not a fan of the whole weed thing. I'm not gonna hate somebody if they're a pot smoker, but really we should be staying away from these things. Link to Joel's stream. I don't think Joel is streaming it. It's going to be streamed on my channel. And it'll be at 9 p.m. Eastern. Skid, it's just the way that the network or the Rumble Studio works. So, like, when you send in a super chat on the Stu Peters Network, it goes into his bank of things, right? There's like how many people that do shows on his network as well as himself. It's almost impossible for them to really tell when someone, you know, did it specifically for my show or whatnot. So it's just not viable for them to send it like over to me, and you know there's a fee process. Like it's I wouldn't expect them to do that. That's why I always just simply let people know if you want to support me directly and my show directly, you have to just do it on my channel. So I try to be as transparent as I can. Sticks, that's very kind of you. With a $20 super chat on my Rumble now, he says, my bad. No, you don't have to apologize. I was just letting you know. Please don't. Don't apologize, and thank you very much for doubling down. I really appreciate that. I just always let people know when I see a super chat in there, because I typically assume if it's on Rumble Studio, you're meaning to support my show. So I always just try to let people know that. Welcome, Laban's Rum, over on the FTJ. All right, folks, I think we might close it up now. Yeah, Philip, I don't hate you if you smoke weed. I'm not like, oh, you should be fucking shunned out of society. I'm not a fan of it. I think it's a bad decision. I think you can do without it. I was a pothead for like a year, believe it or not. And I smoked a lot. Way too much. I was smoking like two or three joints a day. Probably two or three joints a day. And I bought the long wraps. So I know what it's like to be a pothead, and I know how much more productive and more valuable my life is when I'm not on it. So I recommend everybody gets the hell away from it. Don't do it. Just don't do it. But again, I'm not going to hate you if you do it. Be kind of hypocritical of me, right? Because I did it before too, so. But even the hypocritical piece aside, I do think it's best that we're all trying to stay away from anything that alters our mind in any way. All right, folks. I think we're going to call it. thank you, folks, very much for watching today. Thank you for all the super chats. Very kind of you. I really do appreciate the super chats, guys. They really help keep this show going on my end. I have a couple more things I'm going to start doing to upgrade my setup a little bit. I want to get a new mouse pad. My mouse pad, I actually think I've had this since I was like 5 years old. Can you see it's like fading? It's ripping here. I think I was five when I got this thing. So I'm looking to get a new mouse pad. Couple other things, but so the support on the show is always very helpful. It's a one man gig over here, so I really do appreciate everybody supporting, and I really appreciate the chats. Anybody just in here keeping me company, giving me things to talk about, sharing the stream around is always very appreciated. Don't forget, guys, 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, 3 hours from now, I'm gonna be going live again on my Odyssey and my Rumble, as well as FTJ. And we're going to be streaming the Myth of the 20th Century book review with Joel Davis and Jack Brady. It's going to be a really good show. Please make sure you guys catch that. I think it's going to be one of my better shows that we've had this year. I'm really highly anticipating it. So it's going to be a good philosophical discussion about a very important book. If you haven't read it, I really recommend you do. Hopefully the stream will get you inspired to read the book. All right, that being said, thank you, folks, again for watching. I do appreciate it very much, and I will see you guys at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight. That'll be the last show of the week, so I'll catch you guys then. Have a wonderful night. Thank you. Yep, thank you, School of Fish, Secure, Daniel, Anko, Tulip, thank you. Philip, thanks, guys. Have a good one, folks.